Greetings. Welcome to In Conversation with Trevor, brought to you by Heart and Soul Broadcasting Services. I go beyond the headlines and beyond the sensational. Today, I'm in conversation with Panache Lemuel Chanakira, the Chief Investment Officer at PowerTank. If you enjoy this conversation, remember to subscribe, to like, and to share. Let's get down to some work.
I remember the one time one of the employees said, Panache, why is it that your dad is the golden boy of banking? Everything he touches turns to gold. But whenever you come here at Kingdom, everything you touch turns to disaster. Bringing in Robert Kiyosaki, it was just about network.
Yeah.
You know, my dad always says your net worth is your network. If you had put $1,000 in 2010, today your investment would be worth $1.6 billion.
Mm-hmm. Panache Lemuel Chanakira, welcome to In Conversation with Trevor.
Thank you for having me. It's an honor to be here.
So your father has been here, your sister has been here, and you are here because you deserve to sit there. A number of people say to me, so who do you sit down with? And I say, I sit down with people who are making a difference. I sit down with people who I have this very strong sense that they're making an impact, they're building something. Their stories are impactful and their stories will inspire people. So I met you I walked in at the Rich Dad, Poor Dad as you're doing a presentation. And I sat there and I'm like, wow, who is that young man? And I get told that that's Panache Chanakira. So Panache, you're the Chief Investment Officer, CIO, at PowerTank. I'm going to park that on the side and go to a very beautiful place, which is you are a father now to Panache Jr.
Yes, sir.
How has that changed the way you view life and the way you view yourself and why you are here on earth?
I think fatherhood has been such a blessing, you know, for me. You get to appreciate the love and care that my parents had, you know, for me when I was growing up. It's one of those things when he was born, it was such a blessing. And, you know, seeing him cry, being able to hold him in my arms, it changes you, you know, for the good. And I think for me, it's also just a blessing to be able to have my wife with me throughout, you know, this whole journey from the time we were courting and getting into marriage. She has been a pillar of strength, you know.
You've been married for 5 years.
Yes, I've been married for four years.
4 years,
2nd of October.
Oh, wonderful.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Mm. Yeah. And as you are watching that human being growing up, are there any moments where you reflect on the lessons your parents taught you and how you're going to impact this child through the lessons from your parents?
Yes, definitely. You know, growing up, my parents... my mom was the disciplinarian. I got the stick from her a lot. But it was for my own good. You know, in the Bible it says train up a child in the way that they should go. And when they're older, they will not depart from it. My dad was very strict, a bit more relaxed, but you never want to cross, you know, his bad side. So me seeing my son is one of those things. I'm like, okay, I need to instill discipline. But when I look at his eyes, he's so cute. He starts smiling, he starts laughing, and he's always testing. He's 15 months now. So he's always testing, you know, trying to test us more and more, you know, as parents. Yeah. So, but it's a blessing.
It is a blessing. The Rich Dad, Poor Dad conference for me brought in the element of we're all here to build legacies. Your dad, Nigel Chanakira, has done his bit, is still doing his bit. You are doing your bit. Panache is going to do his bit. So you're passing on the baton, is it where the baton stick? And this whole issue of creating a legacy through the work that we do. Now that you have Panache, do you sense the burden?
So I don't see it more as a burden. I see it more as an opportunity. to learn from my dad, who learned from his dad as well. In the Bible, it says that a wise man leaves an inheritance for his children's children. So not just his children, but his children's children. So legacy can come in many forms. There's the financial legacy pertaining to wealth, and then there's also the wisdom. You know, my dad built an amazing business from 1994. That's when he started Kingdom Bank. And I had the privilege of working there since I was 19 years old. I would be in the banking sector. I would also be asset management. I spent most of my time in microfinance under the tutelage of Lloyd Borrero. He's the managing director of Zimnet Financial Services. So my dad really wanted me to understand the company inside out and grooming me to be able to eventually take over. But things happen, you know, the bank closed, but you know, everything happens for a reason, but those lessons I still hold strong to them, and I'm going to pass them onto my son and being able to work with him at Power Tank. He's the executive chairman and I'm the chief investment officer. So we're building something that's a bit different. It's got a bit of a sort of like investment boutique type of niche to it, but we're targeting specific clients. But I always lean on him. He's always served as a sounding board, and I'm hoping to do the same for my son as well.
What lessons, I want us to be specific, what lessons has your father taught you about life? What lessons has your mom taught you about life? Your father shares this picture, which we will try and get hold of and share here, which is his father, himself, you, and Lemuel, four generations. What a beautiful picture. And for me, the beauty about having this conversation is the people that impact this country, the people that impact the world, are people whose life is grounded on values and principles, who have stuff to hand over to their kids. Like you said, wisdom, knowledge, all those beautiful things. So what lessons have you gotten from dad, lessons from your mother?
So there are a lot of lessons. I think the most important thing that my dad taught me is serving the Lord, being born again. You know, my dad always said, I can give you as much money in the world as I can, but what's most important is your relationship with Christ. You need to be righteous. So my dad, also in terms of setting goals, in setting smart goals, they need to be specific, measurable, attainable, realistic, and there needs to be a time frame. So from the time I was 12 years old until now, 36 years old, January comes, I get a phone call from my dad. I'm thinking it's Happy New Year. Yes, that's 30 seconds. Yeah. But where are your goals?
Where you go?
Where are your goals? And it's from me. I'm the firstborn. My brother Tadiwa, second born, he's in the UK. My brother Ponai, he's here in Zim working with my dad. And my sister Mashta, who you did a couple of years ago during COVID. She's in New York. So that really was, it kept me in check. Setting goals, you would track, okay, you said you're going to do this. It's now 6 months in. Have you done it? Why haven't you done it? You know, holding me to account. And then my mom really instilled the importance of getting a good education for us. She really wanted us to go as far as we can pertaining to school. She always used to say, get your degrees now before you get married. Because by the time you get married, to be able to balance kids, to be able to balance marriage, it becomes a bit too much. Not to say it's impossible, but your attention is divided. So I did my undergrad at University of Pretoria, went all the way to master's in the States. And that was with my mom just pushing me to going to orientations. She would always be invested. For her, it's my kids first. And you don't mess with Mrs. Caroline's children otherwise.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, talking of rich dad, poor dad, there she was in the background doing her stuff. And what an amazing woman. And what an amazing family you've got.
Talk to me about it, it must
be beautiful working with dad, but it can't be easy all the time.
Take
me to that place.
It's not easy. So first of all, I just want to give a background story. The plan with my dad was, when I'm done with my master's degree, I work for someone else for 5 years to see what it's like to be in corporate, to be able to grow and learn as much as I can. And then after 5 years, I'll then go work with him, regardless of what he was doing at the time. So I worked at Zimnet Asset Management. I was an investment analyst there. I worked under Rishay Lala, a very, very intelligent man. He was the head of alternative investments there, and he taught me how to do analysis. And then I also then worked at Southland Regional, which is the asset management company. I was the fund manager there. And then towards the end, that's when my 5 years were up. And then working with my dad, he's the executive chairman, but I like the fact that he gives me the leeway to be able to make certain decisions. He's not micromanaging me. He's giving me the license to sign off, whether it's mandates, documents.
Make the mistakes.
Yes, make the mistakes.
Learn from the mistakes.
Learn from the mistakes.
Yeah.
And then I always come back to him. And then, you know, if I made a mistake, he then takes me through, okay, why did I make a mistake? So for him, he was all about teaching me why I'm doing it, not how I'm doing it. Because the person who knows how he's doing it is always at the mercy of the person who knows why.
Why?
Yeah. So, for me, working with him, yes, we butt heads. I think, it's because we're both dominant personalities.
Mm.
He's a firstborn in his family. I'm a firstborn in my family.
Wow.
Yeah. So leading up even to the Kiyosaki events,
yeah,
we see things differently.
He's
more old school. He wants to do things by the book. I'm a bit younger. So I bring that bit of creativity and innovation to it.
Mm.
And then you've got my mom there who is the reason, the voice of reason,
mm,
I would say. So she's good in terms of balancing and managing that relationship.
Mm.
Yeah.
Now, there comes a time, correct me if I'm wrong, when sometimes a son says, I want to step out. I want to be my own man.
Mm-hmm.
And that tension can become something else. I mean, I'm looking at what's been happening with, I'm sure you're following up with Rupert Murdoch,
mm-hmm,
and his children.
Mm-hmm.
Eventually, not the guy who thought he would take over, has taken over the business.
Mm-hmm.
And there's been litigation and that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Does that point, are you... Do you sometimes come to that point where I'm in my dad's shadow? I want to be my own person.
No, not really. I feel that we make a great partnership.
Okay.
I lean on him because of his experience, and he leans on me because of my youth, my energy, and my passion. Initially, I did feel like that when I was at Kingdom Bank, in terms of when I was rotating in the different departments. I remember the one time one of the employees said, Panache, why is it that your dad is the golden boy of banking? Everything he touches turns to gold. But whenever you come here at Kingdom, everything you touch turns to disaster. So I always thought, oh, I have to do that extra bit. I have to do that extra bit. But it was his voice of reason that he would come to me and said, you know, my son, whether you are a CEO in a bank, whether you are an investment analyst, whether you're a graduate trainee, I'm going to love you the same, regardless of where you are.
Mm.
And for me, that's what I needed. I never looked for validation from anyone else. As long as he said that to me, that was more than enough.
Mm. And, the going to a place where you, like we said, you are the chief investment officer.
Mm-hmm.
He's the executive chairman.
Mm-hmm.
Talk to us now about what Power Tank is all about. What does Power Tank do?
Okay.
And what does Panache do in Power Tank?
Okay, so Power Tank is an advisory services company, so mostly business consultancy. We do mergers and acquisitions in Southern Africa. We focus on Zimbabwe. We also do some work in Malawi and in South Africa as well. So we help also people raise money, whether it's through debt or equity financing.
Mm.
Here in Zimbabwe, we've got also some partners in Washington, D.C. as well.
Mm.
So what we do really is we leverage on the relationships that my dad made, you know, through Kingdom Bank. You know, they're all over. If you look at whether it's FBC, if you look at even Zeda, Mr. Chinamo, I reach out to several times for advice and guidance. He's a former Kingdom. Even if you look at IDBZ, Dr. Danga, they're all over. So those relationships have really helped us. I think if you treat people well, other people will always reciprocate the way you treat them. So people don't care what you say and how you do it. They care most importantly about how you make them feel. So that's what we do at Power Tank. We are in the process of working on a couple of other projects. I won't reveal too
sure,
much.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Mm. So the other thing that made me want to talk to you is, you could have been in the diaspora.
Mm.
Your generation, there's a number of them that says, oh, Zimbabwe is tough.
Mm.
You remember at the Rich Dad, Poor Dad conference, I asked Mr. Kasioka what he would say when Zimbabwe and say, oh, but it's tough. Mm. You're talking about all this stuff, things in Zimbabwe are tough.
Mm.
What has made you want to remain here and not be out in the diaspora? Mm. Don't you have people coming to you and said, oh, you could do better out in the diaspora? Mm. I want us to go to that place where there's those push, pull factors around remaining in the country or going outside the country. But before you answer that question, I want us to take a break. So at home, don't go away. When we come back, we will go to that place, which is a lot of tension for young people and even for people that are my generation, given the situation in Zimbabwe, the political situation, the economic situation. Sometimes the grass looks greener on the other side. Where is the grass greener, and what are the push-pull factors for people going into the diaspora? I'm hearing more people coming back home. What are those factors? Let's go there when we come back. See you on the other side.
So it's important not to just surround yourself with people who are like-minded. You know, surround yourself with different people. But it goes beyond just family, but friends as well.
Welcome back to our conversation with Panache Lamuel Chanakira, the Chief Investment Officer at PowerTank. So, like I said, we met for the first time. Actually, I lie because, you know, I think this is where I'm going to embarrass you, because I would come to your home and you were like this. In Danefan. So when I walk in there and I hear you talking, I'm like, wow, is that young man? So proud of what you're doing. I want us to go to picking up what the momentum has been after Rich Dad, Poor Dad.
Mm-hmm.
What an amazing event.
Thank you.
Full house.
Yes.
And what impressed me is I've written in my Substack and Trevor and Associates newsletter is that there were a lot of young people on a Saturday morning, clearly wanting to learn, wanting to sit at the feet of these experienced people who have done things and done them so well. Talk to me, and people, somebody like Robert Kiyosaki, I mean, he was begging to get off the stage, but when he stood and he started talking, I mean, wisdom all over the place, nuggets all over the place. What's been the momentum? What have been the takeaways from that event?
Well, it's gone into overdrive. You know, during the event, people were excited. I mean, I'll give a background story. Leading up to the event, people are like, is he really coming?
Yeah.
Are we seeing him on Zoom? Is it a virtual call? What is really going on?
Yeah.
And when we had a lot of people saying, PowerTank, who are these guys? Are these guys for real? Because we've just recently started. And that, to be honest with you, event planning is not our core service. We don't do that. This was kind of driving into the deep end. But bringing in Robert Kiyosaki, it was just about network.
Yeah.
You know, my dad always says, your net worth is your network. You know what I mean? Your network is your network. And it was through doing some work for our client in South Africa, in Johannesburg, Philip Hazlett from Zitenga. He was there. And he said, you know what? I know Robert. I'll link you up. He can come to Zim. If initially, he was coming for hunting. He came, he organized a Zoom call. Then he's like, look, I want to do something in Zim. I've got a passion for Zim. You know, he saw the hyperinflation, you know, several years ago and how it negatively affected him and his love, you know, for Africa, you know. And so the event, we only had 1 month really to do it, 3 to 4 weeks, to be honest with you. Because they said, you know, we're fully booked until, you know, maybe sometime next year in April. So now is the time. So I was thinking, Dad, how are we going to sell tickets? Yeah. Mom, how are we going to do this? Talking to my brothers, my sisters. And my wife, I remember she said, we can do it.
You can do it.
And when you have that pillar of strength, you know, you got your wife every day. She's amazing. She's a prayer warrior. When you have someone who's always saying, let's do it, baby, let's do it. You know, that for me just kept me going and it gave me that drive. So the event was a resounding success. We were competing with the St. John's.
You were.
You know what I mean? And for me to see the youngsters that were there, they have this hunger and knowledge to want to learn, to have that financial literacy. And for me to see 18, 19 year olds, like 20 year olds who came up to me afterwards wanting more material. And for me, they were like, when is the next one? And I said, listen, I haven't slept in 24 hours. Just give me some time to breathe. But even afterwards, you know, the cash flow board games, that was a hit. Because it really helps people to understand how to you know invest, how to save, how to you know effectively use your finances, you know, for the long term. So even now we still have people who are contacting us wanting more information. We had the privilege of going to Durban. Robert Kiyosaki and his team had an event in Durban about 10 days or so after ours. And they say, and they invited us. We got to have dinner with them. And we thought we did a good job. When we got there, we saw something else. You know what I mean? We're like, okay, fine. We thought we did good. But that's where exposure is important.
Yes.
You can't think that, okay, we've done it now. So is, well, how can we learn? You know, I remember saying to my dad, you know, that we need to breathe a bit. My mom insisted you have to go to Durban because there were a lot of things. Because like I said, event planning is not our core business. There was a lot of things that needed to be done in the office. But I remember my mom said, no, it's fine. It's covered. Go to Durban, learn, grow. And the networking there was amazing. We saw guys who were making millions. Billions of US dollars, not just rands, guys who travel all over the world to learn and to grow. For us, that was just an honor to be there. Yeah.
As you're talking, I get to appreciate the circle of support that you've got around you. That must mean a lot. I mean, your mom, your wife, who's a prayer warrior. My wife is a prayer warrior. I am so blessed. Your dad, your brother, your sister. Talk to me about what that means and when you're stepping out for an assignment.
I think for me, we've got very diverse backgrounds pertaining to education. I'm a finance guy. I studied business management, did my major was business, minor finance and accounting. My brother is a lawyer. So we always say in our family, no one is going to arrest us or do anything because he's just a call away in London.
Right.
He's very, very smart.
Yeah.
He graduated actually master's top of his class, if not top five of his class. And then my other brother, Ponai, he's a marketing guy. So he went to Robert Gordon University in Scotland. And then my sister, as you know, she's studying, she studied acting. So people are always looking at things from different lenses. You know, my wife did marketing, marketing and business psychology. So she looks at things at the mind. Okay, fine. If you do things like this, Panache, think of what the consumer is, what's going through their mind. Let's do tickets like this. Let's do this. You know, even the different variations of the tickets for the event, she helped us come up with that. So it's important not to just surround yourself with, people who are like-minded. You know, surround yourself with different people, but it goes beyond just family, but friends as well. I've got friends who are engineers, friends who studied aeronautical engineering, you know, things like that.
It gives you a 360 degree perspective, doesn't it? A marketing, a lawyer, an artist, a psychologist, and then you throw in your friends there. Throwing in your friends, your sister's in New York, having started acting, and she sat where you're sitting there during COVID. She's in the diaspora. Talk to me about the space where you are, your generation, the constant lived reality of it's tough here. It's not as easy as other places, although being easy is relative because every place has got its challenge. Talk to me about that push-pull factor of do I stay home? Do I go outside? You went to school in California. You've been exposed quite a lot. You know what good service feels like compared to what we do get here from time to time. Talk to me about that pressure. Should I go outside? Should I stay? And I hear more, like I said, more people are coming back and building homes here than going outside. Where are you, you know, state of mind as far as that is concerned?
Okay. I think it's a preference in terms of exactly what do you want to do and how do you want to do it? It goes back to goal setting.
Mm.
For me, I left Zimbabwe when I was 12 years old. I just did primary school here. It was at Lusitania, grade 1 to 5, then Gateway Primary, grade 6 to 7. And then I left to go to high school in Cape Town, Redham House, and then Daintree College. So from 12 years old, South Africa, 12 years old until I was 21, 22, then went to the States, did my master's in global entrepreneurial management at the University of San Francisco in the Bay Area. You know, Silicon Valley. That's a place. You know what I mean? I've had people say, why would you leave San Francisco?
Yeah.
Why would you leave the Bay Area? But one thing that for me is that even when I was overseas, even when I was in South Africa, I'd always come back to Zimbabwe.
Yeah.
Whether it's for a month, whether it's for 6 weeks, whether it's for 2 months working. I mean, I worked at Deloitte, sorry, for a bit. I worked at Rio Zim for a bit.
As a trainee.
My mentor, Mr. Bekin Komo, he was a former CEO there. So I learned a lot from him. I'm still in touch with him. And for me, it was just exposure. I just wanted to get exposure. I was always going to come back to Zimbabwe because I believe that the things that they're doing out there that in Zimbabwe we're not doing, or not only Zimbabwe, but in Africa, we're not doing. And I believe that's how you get that sustainable competitive advantage.
Mm.
One thing I can tell you, there's nothing better than making money in your own country.
Oh, wow.
Being able to make money in your own country, spend it how you want,
Wow. Do
what you want, when you want. Yes, overseas, I mean, the pay is good. You get a good job. But I mean, then what? Look at what happened with Bestens in 2008 during the financial crisis. How many jobs were lost during that time? People who were chief investment officers like me lost jobs, where a company was valued for $24 billion at its peak in January 2007. And then in March 2008, it's valued at $213 million, sold for $2 per share by JP Morgan.
Mm.
But at its peak, it was $170 per share. And then that's it. It's gone. It's wiped out.
Mm.
So, I mean, it has its pros and cons. My brother, he's overseas. He loves it. He's always loved traveling. He's got a very good job in the UK, but he's smart. He makes investments.
Mm.
He's got other things that he's doing. So it's about, if you go there, are you just going to stick with your one salary? Are you going to make investments? Are you going to, he does work as well for us. You know what I mean? For other people. And he's a lawyer. But when you lose that job overseas, you're coming back to what? You know what I mean?
Mm.
Yeah. So it's just
a matter of preference.
Definitely.
And a matter of purpose. And like you're saying,
a
matter of setting goal. So that's the diaspora issue. In your education, I mean, you did a BCom in business management, University of Pretoria.
Yes.
A BCom in management, University of KwaZulu-Natal.
Mm-hmm.
And then you did a master's in University of South California.
Mm.
You did something interesting here, which is a master's preparation program certificate.
Mm-hmm.
Well, what does that mean? How does that look like?
So what happened is that I did my undergrad in South Africa.
Yeah.
And I finished business management, as you said, in Pretoria.
Yeah.
And I went to KZN, did my 1 year honors in management, you know, finance. Then I applied to do my master's. I got accepted to 3 universities. University of Cape Town, Development Finance, Wits University, to do an MBA there. And then I got accepted into Free State University to do a master's in finance.
Mm-hmm.
And just before I accepted the my place, my dad and mom called me for a meeting. I thought I had done something wrong. I said, look, I'm doing, and I wanted to go back to Cape Town. I grew up there. I will live there from 12 years old until I was about 17. 5 years, my friends are there. It's home to me. You know what I mean? And then I was going to UCT. That's where I was going for masters. And then my dad says, you know what? I think you should go overseas. And I said, but I want to go back together. He's like, yes, but you've done it in South Africa. You went to high school here. You've done varsity, undergrad.
Wow.
Go and get some exposure. So I had to, so I was like, okay, fine. And remember it was January 2015 and UCT, I was supposed to start end of February. If I was going to apply to the States, I'd have to apply for September. So it means that I had to, you know, reject the offer, to go to UCT and then begin applying to go overseas, then you have to do the GMAT, you have to do those English tests, you know, all that stuff. And I was like, but what if I don't get accepted?
Yeah.
Or then do I go back to UCT and say, take me again next year? But anyway, so my dad said, you know what? If you don't do this, you'll never get a chance to do it. Then my mom said, remember what I was always telling you when you were a kid? Finish your school when you, before you get married. And then, you know what I mean? You can do whatever you want. So I then did my research, applied to University of San Francisco, did the GMAT, passed, did the interviews, got accepted. And that was starting in September. However, I was looking around, then I said, ah, Mom, there's this master's preparation certificate at University of Southern California in Los Angeles. And what they do is they teach you about graduate school. I said, I've never studied overseas. The referencing, just something as simple as referencing, is different. In South Africa, we used at the time the Harvard referencing method. Mm. You know, the and then in the States, they use the APA referencing method. So minor things like that. For me, I don't like getting to a place and being unprepared. So I value preparation. You have to be prepared. I guess it's because I've got a sporting background.
Mm.
You can't go in there to run, to play 90 minutes of football when you haven't been running 10Ks at least three, four times a week. It's just not going to work.
Mm.
So, I went to Southern California for 4 months from May. I remember to August. I learned how to do research the American way.
Mm-hmm.
I learned how to write essays the American way. I learned how to do a thesis the American way. I learned how to write an extended proposal.
Did it pay off in the end?
Definitely. I graduated.
So that meeting was very important.
It was
very that you were summoned to by mom and
dad. Yeah, definitely. Definitely. I mean, as a result of that, I graduated with a 3.91
GPA. Wow. Wow.
Out of 4.0. So, yeah.
You've already spoken about what sport has done for you.
Mm-hmm.
You have received quite a number of awards, under 12, Mashonaland Province, hockey, and a number of things that you've done in sport.
Mm-hmm.
We will go there when we come back after this break. So at home, don't go away. The man is a sports person. He plays hockey. He plays tennis. And a lot of other things. There's something else that a lot of people are going to be surprised by when we disclose what this young man has been able to do that not lots of men do. See you on the other side.
So people lost a lot of money.
Yeah.
And people are apprehensive to the whole investing, you know, part of it.
Africa leadership faces unprecedented challenges. Every decision is scrutinized. Every action is amplified. Every crisis can define your legacy. Zimbabwe is a nation in crisis. Our continent faces complex realities. But denial is more dangerous than crisis itself. At Trevor and Associates, we believe strategic communication is the foundation of effective leadership. Communication, when done strategically, is leadership. It is action. It is behavior. It is clarity when the world is confused. It is dignity when the world is divided. Your reputation is your most valuable asset and your most vulnerable. In a digital age where one post can undo decades of credibility, we don't just manage reputation, we build resilience. Crisis is no longer a probability, it is a certainty. The question is, how prepared will you be when it arrives? Ethical lobbying is essential to democracy and progress. We help you advocate effectively, not with bluster, but with research, relationships, and respect. If you are not shaping the conversation, you are being shaped by it. In an era demanding accountability, responsible business practices aren't optional. They are essential. We help organizations align profit with purpose, ensuring sustainability and stakeholder trust. Doing good is not just morally right. It is good for the bottom line and long-term success. For over 36 years, Trevor has built relationships across the globe, helping leaders navigate complexity with integrity. We listen before we speak. We understand before we advise. We serve with sincerity, sound judgment, and commitment to ethical leadership. Trevor and Associates. We help you build narratives that uplift, protect what you've built, amplify your values in a world hungry for substance and sincerity. Trevor and Associates, your strategic partner, your narrative architect, your advocate in the corridors of power. Trevor and Associates, building resilient leaders for a changing Africa.
Welcome back to our conversation with Panache Lamuel Chanakira, the Chief Investment Officer at Power Tank. It can't be easy being somebody who points people towards investment in a country such as ours. Mm-hmm. I'm sure there's opportunities because the crisis presents opportunities. Mm-hmm. But it's tough out there. You know, you sit down with a stockbroker and you say, where do I put my money? Mm-hmm. And the currency is doing, you've got to consider where the currency is going, which currency you're looking into. You've got to consider the political factors and so forth. Mm-hmm. So in your day-to-day job in Zimbabwe, where are you suggesting people put their money? On the stocks, on currency, in bonds? Are there EFTs in Zimbabwe? Crypto? Where are you saying people should put in their money?
Okay, there are multitudes of places where people can put their money. I don't like to just look at one aspect. I look at many different aspects. For example, if you're looking at the Victoria Falls Stock Exchange, it's in US dollars. You know, I mean, yes, people believe it's not as liquid as they anticipated it would be, but you've got counters, there are 15 counters that are really trading. For example, African Sun is trading, I think, $5 per share. Mm-hmm. So instead of, you could buy maybe 10 of those, $50. And then you've got other counters as well. You've got Inscore there, you've got Simbisa there as well, where in the past year or so, they've had close to 15% return on investment. Mm. And then there are other things as well. The Zimbabwe Stock Exchange, there are some counters there. But where you want to look at really is counters that pay dividends. You know, your Delta, you know, your Econet, your blue chip companies. Those are the type of stocks that you want to buy and then get some sort of dividend on that. And then pertaining to cryptocurrency, Bitcoin, let me just put it into perspective. In 2010, Bitcoin was going for 40 cents per Bitcoin. Mm. Today it's trading at about 124, 27,000, something like that. If you had put $1,000 in 2010, today your investment would be worth 1.6 billion. Mm. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know, but, it's things like that that we, and the thing about Bitcoin, unlike cash where, it gets printed and the excess printing leads to hyperinflation.
Yeah. Yeah.
It leads to all sorts of things, you know, going back. But when you look at the Bitcoin, they're 21 million. It's capped.
That's it.
At 21. That's it.
Yeah.
And then right now in circulation, there's only 19.5 million that's in circulation. So it's something that's worth exploring, but as pertaining to being an alternative investment class. But something maybe that could work, I think, as well as looking at gold, where right now it's going at $3,900 per ounce. Last year around this time it was going for about $2,700 per ounce. That's about, I think, a 54% increase.
If you had put your money in there.
If you had put your money in there. But, you know, you get people now like, okay, Panache, that's good to know, but I don't have 3,000, you know, right now.
Yeah.
I don't have the 127,000 to buy, but you look, maybe get silver. You know, like 40 something dollars per ounce, you buy silver, you watch it grow, you leave it there for.
But my question as a young person would be, how do I do this, Panache? How do I do it? Where do I take my, I'll give you a practical example. A young man says to me, I've got $180 US dollars that I've saved, which is great to be able to save $108 in this market. And he says, I'm thinking of putting that money in chickens. And I'm saying, oh, wait, because I did chickens and I bent my fingers there.
Yeah, yeah.
Maybe you shouldn't put chickens. How can this young man come and bring you, give you as an investment advisor, they're $180 for you to put away? What are the practical steps?
So the practical step obviously is coming through. I would prefer people to actually register a company, as opposed to them trading with their own personal account.
Yeah.
So that company, register a company, you can do that in like 24 hours. You know what I mean? And then you bring your money in and then we look at the counters. I want to understand, what are you? Are you risk averse? Are you a bit tentative? What is your investment philosophy? It obviously it's not something that everyone knows, but I'll take you through the steps and then I then guide you. We could split it up. Maybe some of it you put in silver. Maybe some of it you put in what you in the stocks. For stocks, obviously, we don't have a stockbroking license. We're not stockbrokers. But there are many stockbrokers that we then link you up with. You know, you've got your IH Securities, you've got your CABS, you've got EFE Securities, you know, institutions like that, that are very, very good. They're the ones who have the license to then trade.
So your advice is register a company.
Yes.
Bring your 180 bucks, as an entity.
Yes.
Then you help them, you guide them to where they would put that.
Yes,
money.
We could guide them to where they can put it, even in South Africa as well. Mm. There's also options to open a trading account there. Mm. We can facilitate that.
Well, I think for me, that group of people that, the hundreds that attended that conference represents a yearning, for people who don't want to put their money under the pillow, as it were, under the bed. Mm. They want to invest that money. Mm. And creating, cultivating a culture that I can save $10 a month, put it away. Mm. At the end of the year, it's $120. Mm. So it doesn't matter where you start, where you begin. Do you agree with that kind of philosophy?
Yes, yes, definitely I agree with it. I think the one thing that maybe people are scared because of what happened.
Yes.
I'm not going to name any
absolutely.
Names, any companies yeah. in case people are still looking for me.
Absolutely.
But people lost a lot of money.
Yeah.
People are apprehensive to the whole investing, you know, part of it. But maybe one thing that can make people feel a bit more at ease is we take them through investing in an index fund.
Okay.
For example, it's something that is index fund tracks a specific, whether it's industry or specific companies. For example, you've got a fund that can track like the S&P 500
yes.
in the States, standing for the top 500 most liquid companies on the stock exchange. You put your money into there, or even an all-share index, which just tracks the average price of the shares, or even ETF that tracks maybe just the banking sector on the listed company, maybe just the insurance sector, or maybe just the mining sector or something like that, or even rates as well. We put that money in there. Then you're not worried if maybe a CEO of a big corporate gets arrested and then the share price plummets.
Down.
Or if there's some sort of corporate governance issues, or maybe an accounting firm hasn't really done what they were supposed to do pertaining to auditing the company, or maybe they were unlawful payouts to top executives. Mm. You're not worried about that.
Mm.
You're then just tracking the fund.
Fantastic. You like we said before we took a break, you are a sports person.
Mm-hmm.
Your father is also a sports
yes,
person. I mean, your father used to play football.
Definitely.
The one thing that your father and I don't see eye to eye is that he supports this team, which I'm not going to mention. I support Arsenal.
Yeah.
And you played football.
Yes, I do.
You play tennis.
Uh-huh.
You've already indicated the value of what sports has taught you, which is come prepared.
Mm.
Prepare all the time.
Mm.
What sports have you been involved in? If you could just run
okay.
those.
So first of all, my wife supports Arsenal.
Oh,
so
there is somebody who's won.
I get to tease her that they haven't won a league since 2003.
Now you're behaving like your father.
I actually grew up supporting Liverpool. Funny, I'm a Man United fan, but my dad and his best friend, Uncle Edgar Nyampingiza, they bought me all the Liverpool tapes and John Barnes t-shirts. I knew the Ian Rushes.
How can you support
that.
Any team so, when you're living with Nigel Tanakira?
I know. My dad calls me the prodigal son. He's always waiting by the veranda waiting for me to come back home. But I've got a soft spot for them.
Yeah.
But, you know, anyway, I played quite a bit of sport when I was young. I played football.
Mm.
I was passionate about it. My dad would always be there. I guess because of him, he played for Mashonaland.
Mm.
So I played for Gauteng Central in under 17. This is in South Africa.
Mm-hmm.
Then I had the privilege of being at the High Performance Center in Pretoria in South Africa. I played soccer there for the Tucks under 19 team.
Mm.
Then I also played tennis. That was my passion actually growing up. I went to the John Newcomb Tennis Ranch in Austin, in Texas, New Braunfels, Texas, just outside San Antonio, actually. So my dad sent me there because just his exposure again.
Yes.
I was in South Africa, but he says, no, go and see what other tennis players are doing your age. Got there, was blown away, training 5-6 hours a day. And it's just about preparation. You know, you take that discipline of playing sport and then you apply it to your life in general. You know, the training, the waking up at 5 a.m., the running.
The discipline,
you know. It's the same discipline that I have now pertaining to building financial models, analyzing companies, looking at their historicals, doing financial projections, you know, for the next 5 to 10 years, seeing, okay, fine, where can people put their money? Where can I put my money? Reading every day. We just don't read.
Mm.
You know, as Africans, we don't read. Someone once said, if you want to hide $1,000, put it in a book. It'll be there when you come.
Absolutely, absolutely. It's yeah. It's a sad indictment
it is,
don't read, and yet there's so much benefit that comes from reading.
Yeah.
You ended up playing tennis for the Western Province.
Yes,
right?
I did. Right. Under 14 and under 16 in Cape Town.
Mm.
So I played provincial tennis.
Was there a moment when you were tempted, I think I'm going to do one of these professionally?
Yes, I did. I wanted to go to Wimbledon, actually. SW19, that was my dream.
Right.
But I quickly realized that when I got to, I think, 15, 16, I wasn't as good as I thought I was.
Mm.
The good thing is that I made the decision.
That realization is important.
Yeah, I made it quite quickly, and God works in mysterious ways. I won the Victor Ludorum at Gateway Primary School in grade 7, right? And I stopped doing track for 5 years when I was in high school, 4 or 5 years. When I then started doing track a month after I quit tennis, I stopped playing tennis, I then made it for Western Province track and field. And then a year after that, I was playing Gauteng Central, whereas it took me about 4 or 5 years to make it provincial tennis-wise. Mm. But in like 3 or 4 months, I was able to switch. But unfortunately, injuries happened. I had six surgeries in about 3 years, two on my right hip, one on my left groin, one on my shoulder, tore my hamstring about 7 or 8 times. But it was a blessing in disguise because, like I said, I don't believe God never makes a mistake.
No.
Everything happens for a reason, and he knew you before we were formed in our mother's womb. So he knew that was going to happen. It was unfortunate, but I had school. You know what I mean? There are many people like, oh, I want to be a professional. Yes, it's good. I'm not saying you can't do it,
but have
something else that you're doing as well. You can't, because my mom always used to say, you can't be training 20 hours a day. You train maybe 4 or 5 hours a day. What else are you doing? Mm-hmm. Go to school. Get a degree. Yeah. You can't, you know what I mean? Educate yourself. If it's not a degree, get a diploma. But learn as much as you can. And that's it. So for me, when I got the injuries, I wasn't like, oh no, what am I going to do now? When I got the injuries, I just finished my honors, actually. So that's when the injury started happening. And then I then said, you know what? The sports thing is out. Then I went to do my master's. Mm-hmm. It was in San Francisco.
Reality dawned.
Definitely.
And you embrace it.
Yeah, yeah.
And you move on.
Mm-hmm.
Talk to me about how will you lead yourself?
Mm-hmm.
You sound like a very focused young man. I mean, with a father like Nigel, you've got to be.
Yeah,
setting goals, success motivation international.
Mm-hmm.
But talk to me about the habits that you've formed,
mm-hmm.
that you live by, that mm-hmm. you could share with young people out there. Because for me, my disappointment with your generation and the younger generation, mm-hmm. and sometimes people my age is, we don't read.
Mm-hmm.
And if we don't read, mm-hmm. our imagination is affected.
Mm-hmm.
Our aspirations are affected. A lot of things mm-hmm. come through reading.
Mm-hmm.
When you feed your mind,
mm-hmm.
When you cultivate thoughts that are not your normal routine. So mm-hmm. I encourage reading quite a lot.
Mm-hmm.
What habits have you formed that you do on a daily basis that help you become a better person?
I think for me, what's most important is my relationship with God.
Mm-hmm.
So in the morning when we wake up, it's Bible reading. My wife and I, we do our Bible reading. We pray together. That not only brings us closer together as husband and wife, but it brings us closer together to God. You know, it's that relationship with God is very important mm-hmm. to me. I will go to Celebration Church, Borodo. Been there since I was 5 years old, back then when it was called Rema.
Mm.
And then I also read every day. I'm always reading something.
Mm.
Right now I'm reading Philip Haslam's book on why, how money destroys nations.
Mm.
So I'm always reading, always trying to learn. And then usually after reading my Bible, praying, after reading a book, I go for a run about 7-8 kilometers, about 3-4 times a week. If I'm not going for a run, I go play tennis. I still play tennis. Despite the injuries, I still play sports, and then I play basketball as well, just for fun. I'm not that good. shoot a lot of air balls, but I mean, but yeah, I play Sundays usually with my friends. We play by ZB Sports Club. We used to play Barclays.
Oh, that's beautiful, Dad.
Out, so we're at ZB Sports Club. And then, I play soccer as well,
mm-hmm.
But 5-a-side just by Patrick Van Action Soccer. Mm-hmm. It helps because because then you don't get into things that you're not supposed to.
No.
You know what I mean? It keeps you out of trouble.
Absolutely.
It keeps you grounded. It's a blessing that despite the injuries that I've had, I can still play. I can still compete. And that's where for me, the joy comes from. And then I think for me, in terms of reading, I mentioned Celebration Church.
Yeah.
So I go to Pastor Tom. He's the senior pastor. I've learned so much from him. I serve in protocol. In the church protocol, and that has helped me keep grounded, learning as much as I can, gaining the wisdom from Pastor Bonnie, who I serve, and then Pastor Tom as well. He says that knowledge from the Bible is knowledge from you know, education knowledge, you know, that's good. And then knowledge and wisdom that you get from the Bible is even better. But when you combine the two, that's the best.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
It's perfect.
So I live by that mantra.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's fantastic. And then you did something strange. And I look at this. 2006, you decided to compete in a beauty
I was hoping you didn't bring that up.
Wow. I mean, I saw that. I'm like, wow, that's a nugget. Why did you do that? What was the thinking?
So what was funny is that I did my high school at Rhythm House in Cape Town from grade 8 to 11. Then my matric year, I moved to Denfeng College in Johannesburg, which is just outside Denfeng Gulf Estate, where we were living at the time. And I was the new kid, you know, matric, new kid on the block. And they said there's this Mr. and Miss Denfeng beauty pageant. And my friends said, why don't you register? As a joke. They said, why don't you do it? And I don't know if they were really my friends because I'd only been at the school for a month. So I was like, maybe they're trying to pull a fast one or something.
Or maybe you also trying to impress them.
Maybe it could have been. So I registered, competed, and lo and behold, I won. There were about 20 men, 20 boys, because I was 17 at the time, 20 girls. And then they picked 3 finalists. And I remember then they asked you a question. And I remember the question they asked me was, what would you say to someone who's feeling discouraged?
Mm-hmm.
And because I used to read a lot and I was a sportsman, I said, no, in life, I remember my answer, in life is like a race. You'll be running. Where there's 10Ks, you're running. You're trying your best. You feel like your chest is just going to come out. You feel like you can't breathe anymore. But the more that you keep going, the more that your mind gets stronger. If you can learn to defeat that mentality that says, give up, you can't do it. You will conquer anything. You just can't give up. And that's the answer I gave. So they finished everything. They're announcing the winner. And the winner is Panache. Like, oh, my mom went crazy.
I was sitting in the crowd.
My mom went crazy. My dad. In South Africa. So it was something special. Then from February until December, even until now, my friends still call me Mr. Dane.
Oh, wow. Wow. Amazing stuff. You're too young for me, perhaps, to ask you this question. Have you ever failed? Is there anything that has humbled you in life?
Yeah, definitely. Mm-hmm. I've failed. I failed several times in school. I struggled in school earlier when I was in high school, actually. Mm-hmm. I guess maybe the discipline of not of doing too much sport. And my mom would always say, don't do too much sport and focus more on your school. So in grade 11, I remember I used to get at least 70% average. 65, I wasn't like extremely clever. But then I remember my science exam, I got, I think, like 30%.
Wow.
And I remember dreading to go home. It was grade 11, end of, at least it was a matric. Then, and back then, they would get, in South Africa, they give you the report cards and then you have to give them to your parents. So they give you at school. And then, but I opened it just so that I could see what my fate would be without.
When I got home.
30%, you know, I put it, I gave it to my mom. She was not happy. It's like, I told you about your sport. You know, you're thinking that you're going to be this huge sports star, but you're just not taking education seriously. And yes, it was just one subject. Everything else was bubble. But my mom's like, you don't want to do your degree and pass 10 subjects and fail one. You're not graduating. That's the mindset she wanted to have. But whereas high school nowadays, they just let people go through. You know what I mean? So it humbled me. And then in grade 12, then I then pulled my socks up and then really just started working extremely hard.
That's beautiful that we learn from our failures.
Yeah.
And we should not be afraid to fail. Let's turn to books now. You've already mentioned a couple of books. A lot of our viewers out there love this book section. By the way, we have created a book club. It's on WhatsApp. It's growing quite nicely. People sharing books, people discussing books. I love books because I keep on telling people I'm dyslexic. I have problems with reading. I have problems with comprehension. I read to improve my comprehension. I read to widen my horizon. And I'm not ashamed to say I'm a better person because of reading. You've already mentioned a couple of books there. But before we go to your books, I just want to share a couple of three books, actually, with the reading public out there. There's this a book that I've recommended before, 0 to 1 by Peter Thiel with Black Masters. Peter Thiel, I disagree with his politics. He's a Trump supporter. I'm not a Trump supporter, but I love his ideas here, which are not on startups or how to build the future. And one of the things that Peter Thiel believes in, by the way, is that our education worldwide is wrong because we're looking at sending people to get degrees rather than giving people skills. So he actually gives scholarships, I think, $1 million a year for people that opt to drop out of university and pursue what they're passionate about. That's if you look at some of the biggest entrepreneurs in the world, they did not go to university. They dropped out and maybe went back. But there's this pressure that you must get a university degree. Yes, it's important, but what if there's something that you're passionate about and you can pursue and achieve something there? So this is a really great book about that and how to start up, to do startups. Then the other thing, the other book is by Clayton Christensen, which is The Innovator's Dilemma. The pressure that people that start things have, innovators are under so much pressure because you innovate something. Meanwhile, other people are studying what you've innovated and they are trying to copy what you're doing. You can't stay in the same place. You got to keep on growing. Otherwise, the people that are watching you and copying you will get better than you. So that's the innovator's dilemma. And it's like running a treadmill. Then The Art of Possibility by Rosamund Stone Zander and Benjamin Zander. It's a beautiful book about being present. I love books that treat me about being present all the time and learning from yourself and from the people that are around you. And I go to these books because I find that your generation and the younger generation are mostly on their phones and not learning from what's around them and not getting to know who they are, because you only get to know who you are if you spend yourself time with yourself, not with your phone, particularly not reading WhatsApp. WhatsApp is not a source of information. Books are a source of information. So that's my passion about reading and the books that I have to share. What books have you read that you'd love to share?
So for me, I tend to gravitate towards books that let's talk about where I want to go, you know, in my life. You know, I want to go to Wall Street. That's the ambition.
Wall Street, here we come. Yeah.
So my dad, that was his ambition.
Yes,
he was able to list on the London Stock Exchange through the Mingles.
Yes.
So I believe we should be I should be standing on his shoulders. So I've read three books, I guess, that stood out to me is House of Cards by William Covey. So there he just talks about the financial crisis in 2008, you know, specifically focusing on Bear Stearns, Lehman Brothers, what led up to that. The issue of the housing bubble, you know, burst, reliance, you know, over-reliance on mortgage securities. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Subprime mortgage lending, you know, things like that. And then the other book that I read is called The Snowball, the biography of Warren Buffett. You know, that was written by Alice Schroeder. So it basically talks about Warren Buffett's upbringing. Then it takes a look at also his investment portfolio. I like the fact that before he wrote the book, he conducted 2,000 hours worth of interviews with Warren Buffett, his family, his friends, his colleagues. So what more do you want? Usually I prefer reading an autobiography by someone who's written it. You know what I mean? By the individual, you know, he's writing about himself as opposed to someone
yes.
who's writing. But the fact that I saw that 2000, I was like, you know what? I'm in.
This is worth
it. Yeah. And then the other book that I really loved was, Principles, by Ray Dalio.
Ray Dalio.
Yeah. Yeah. So he's the chief investment officer of Bridgewater Associates. They manage $160 billion worth of assets. That's what I want to do. That's where I want to be. And principle is not just about principles. Oh, it doesn't apply here in Zimbabwe. A principle is a principle.
Absolutely.
Just the same thing as the Bible. God, the Bible was written to apply to any generation. So you can't then say, oh, God, this is outdated. No, a principle is a principle. And God's love, remember, it's unconditional.
Absolutely.
But his promises are conditional. Mm-hmm. So you have to abide by his promises for you to be able to abide by his principles for you to be able to get the promises mm-hmm. that Jesus has made for us.
Fantastic. Mm-hmm. And you, to go to the place where you said, you know, God doesn't make mistakes mm-hmm. and God doesn't make rejects.
Yeah.
Wow. What a pleasure. It's been talking to you.
Thank you for having me.
Panache.
Thank you.
It's young people like you that give me the hope about this country.
Mm-hmm.
Young people that are principled, stand on certain set of values, work towards achieving those values.
Mm-hmm.
You have a vision. You have goals.
Mm-hmm.
You want to build something.
Mm-hmm.
You want to leave something behind. Mm-hmm. I love that. And I'm sure that this episode is going to inspire quite a lot of people out there.
Mm-hmm.
I must say this, as you're talking, you sound so much like your father.
Oh, really? Yeah, many people say that. But I learned from him.
You use that kind of stuff. Panache, wonderful talking to you.
Thank you.
And wish you all the best. And we'll keep on watching you. Mm-hmm. Wall Street, here we come.
Thank you.
Wonderful.
Thank you so much.
Remain sitting there. Allow me to attend to our viewers who are all over the world. I was looking yesterday. We are almost 13 million views. We are very close to 100,000 subscribers. I mean, that's amazing. Thank you so much for all the subscribers, all the viewers are out there. Keep on watching, keep on sharing. If you enjoyed this episode, please remember to subscribe, to like, and to share. Until next time, cheers to you all.